Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here. Welcome back to Tesla Daily. Today we're going to be going through some of the takeaways from Tesla's Cyber Rodeo event. We've got some new details on the Model Y and Cybertruck. Then we'll check in on the situation in China with the shutdowns and take a look at March production and sales numbers. Those were just released today. We also have a price increase from Tesla from last week that we didn't have a chance to cover, and a couple other things as well. Looking at the markets, it has been a challenging few days since that Cyber Rodeo event, but I think most of that has been macro-driven. Tesla today down 4.8% to $975.93, while the NASDAQ was down 2.2%, which, as we have talked about, that's generally a bottom 5 percentile day for the NASDAQ, though we sure seem to be getting a lot of those this year so far. We haven't checked in on it in a while, but the 10-year yield does continue to rise. It's now at almost 2.8%. This is up almost a full percentage point since the start of March, and is now only about 50 basis points off the 5-year peak. So interest rates rising, yields rising, cost of capital rising, generally that means worse things for growth stocks. Fortunately for Tesla, while they are a growth stock, they're not financing their growth via debt like a lot of other growth companies would be doing. But on the other hand, we know that oftentimes the market tends to trade in buckets, and Tesla, from a share price perspective at least, is not going to be immune to some of those impacts. So it'll be interesting to continue to keep an eye on that. And then we do have a pretty big macro week this week with the release of the core CPI, Consumer Price Index, tomorrow, an hour before market open, that's Tuesday, and then the PPI, Producer Price Index, an hour before market open on Wednesday. This will also be a short week with the markets closed on Friday in observance of Good Friday, so probably no episode that day, and then we'll already head into earnings week next week. So a lot of events upcoming, but I want to start here today with an event from last week, and that of course is the Cyber Rodeo. We had that brief live stream, we had the highlight video, but I haven't had a chance to share my thoughts yet and go through some of the things that I found to be important. First off, just in terms of the event itself, I think Tesla, given the certainly limited time that they had to pull this off, did a phenomenal job with executing it. For me at least, the experience went about as smoothly as you could possibly expect for an event of that size. And it was awesome to get to meet a lot of listeners, meet a lot of people in the Tesla community, ton of fun doing that, and then also meet a few Tesla employees that are listeners as well, which is always fun to hear about. I hope that from the live stream that Tesla did, a lot of the feel of the event cut through. This felt like a big event. It felt like Tesla's previous events just kind of like scaled up by 10. We were making a few jokes in our group that, oh, this is now the $1 trillion Tesla, and it's fun to see that evolution. I've been very fortunate to be able to attend a few of these events over the years, and they've always been fun, but this was definitely next level in terms of just the production value and certainly the scale of the event. Now, obviously everyone can't attend, so I'm not saying that to give anyone even higher fear of missing out. I actually think that if you were following on Twitter, if you followed the live stream, you're gonna see everything that Tesla showed off. And again, I think Tesla did a pretty good job of capturing just the overall feel, which to me, that was one of the biggest takeaways. I mean, we didn't learn all that many new things. We'll talk about some of those items here in a second. But at the end of the day, this really was a milestone celebration. This was Elon and Tesla getting up there and saying, hey, we told you a year and a half ago at Battery Day what we were going to be doing. We've been working extremely hard on accomplishing that, and today we're delivering the first of those vehicles with some of those things that we talked about on that day. All you have to do is go back to my Battery Day video when I talked about how that was the roadmap for Tesla to become the biggest company in the world by far. With this milestone, we heard Elon echo that sentiment again, and he re-emphasized that Tesla is going to grow to extremely massive scale, a scale that no other company has ever achieved before in the history of the world. I mean, how can you listen to Elon say that with such extreme confidence and not come away excited and inspired about what Tesla can and will achieve? I mean, it's reinvigorating for me, even just from a Tesla Daily perspective. I would have to imagine that a lot of the employees have that same feeling of inspiration from this event. Obviously, it's inspiring for investors, but more importantly, it's inspiring for talent, whether that's through retention or recruiting. Seeing Tesla's vision evolve over time and just grow right alongside the scale of the actual business is incredibly fun to see, and despite that evolution in their growth and their growth prospects, Tesla is still carrying with them that same mentality that they've always had, and that stems directly from Elon Musk, and you could tell by his mood and his extreme confidence in this growth plan that that is going to continue, and that is going to bring something to the world that we have never ever seen before. You can complain about how Elon acts on Twitter all you want, but some of those same characteristics that causes some things that maybe I don't agree with or maybe you don't agree with, whatever it is, those same characteristics are what transcend well beyond some 280 character mistakes into the DNA of this company that does not act or think like any other company in the world, let alone a company of this size. We're still in the very early innings of seeing what Tesla is able to accomplish with some of the advantages that this type of scale affords to them, and I think this event was just a small glimpse into that future. So I'm very excited about it. Let's move on from the superlatives. Let's talk about some of the things that Elon talked about. First off, I think everyone noticed he mentioned a dedicated robotaxi Tesla's working on. I don't have a whole lot to say on that because, frankly, it would be much more surprising to me if Tesla had not been working on that. If you believe that autonomy is almost solved, then how could you not be? As for the market itself, I don't think the market really believes that. So the market's not going to be all that excited by it and probably actually views it as a potential liability, especially if that's taking the place in the product roadmap of something like a $25,000 vehicle, which the market is much more accepting and understanding of. So dedicated robotaxi confirmed, but then in terms of new products, what was most exciting to me was Elon alluding to the fact that they do have other things on the roadmap beyond all the stuff that we already know about, which is already a pretty robust roadmap for at least 5 years and then potentially even decades, depending on the Tesla bot. And yet, apparently there is more. I think what's really exciting too over the last year is that it's become very clear that Elon is going to be staying with Tesla long term. I think there was reasonable doubt on that based on some of his comments around being Tesla CEO, around SpaceX versus Tesla, the completion of his last performance award, which will happen here in the next few months. I think there were fair questions about how active Elon's involvement might be in the future, but I think those questions have been fully answered with what we have seen Tesla and Elon talk about over the last year. All right, anyway, what about some more present day type of things then? Well, we know Tesla did deliver new Texas-made Model Ys to a few people, presumably those were employees, because we still have not received any official details from Tesla on what the specs of the Model Y that they're making there are. Fortunately, we do seem to have pretty good details. Tesla Raj was at the event and was able to sit in a Model Y that was at the factory. I didn't come across this particular vehicle, it's a big place, but from the touchscreen here we can see that this is a standard range dual motor Model Y, which Tesla has not ever made before. Both the version that they offered in the US for a very brief amount of time and the China-made standard range Model Y are rear-wheel drive, so single-motor versions, making this a new configuration. This is an Austin-made VIN, and the display also showed 53 miles of range and 19%. Backing that out, that would equate to a full range of 279 miles, which actually matches the EPA filing for a new all-wheel drive Model Y that we had discussed back in March. So it does appear that this is the first vehicle with 4680s. Some Tesla employees apparently confirmed that those vehicles that were delivered did have 4680s. As we have talked about, because Tesla will be constrained on 4680 battery cells while they ramp up that production, it does make sense to start with a standard range vehicle and get as many vehicles out of that limited production as possible. It did sound like Tesla has started actual production of 4680s at Giga Texas, so that should help because we've seen a pretty limited run rate from Cato Road so far. So that is still going to be a limit on Texas's output as Tesla figures out that volume production. I'll feel a little bit better about that when Tesla actually starts offering this vehicle for sale. We did see it over the last couple of days get added to the source code on Tesla's design studio for the Model Y. Pretty small text, but you can see some of the details here. So Model Y all-wheel drive, range 279, top speed 135, and acceleration of 5 seconds flat. I do think this will be a very compelling vehicle that I would expect Tesla to price anywhere from $55,000 to $60,000, but I do wish the efficiency metrics on that EPA filing did look better. As we talked about, it's pretty much the same efficiency as the long-range version, even though naturally it should be more efficient because it has fewer batteries, just even not considering 4680s. And then based on some of the things that Tesla talked about with 4680s at battery day and those things that can improve gravimetric energy density, that should improve weight as well. So what I'm hoping is happening here is that you may remember back when Tesla had first launched the Model 3, they actually adjusted down the EPA test results. I'm hoping that's what they're doing here and the actual efficiency is a little bit better. Maybe some of those improvements will show up more over time. Obviously, one of the biggest wins from 4680s is going to be improvements in cost of manufacturing, but still, I think everybody, if they're honest, would be expecting efficiency improvements as well. So we'll see, but a lot more to learn on that, and hopefully that'll happen soon. All right, the last thing I want to touch on from the event is the Cybertruck. Obviously, we got some good footage of that, nice and up close. This is looking very similar to the original prototype. Obviously, the door is a little bit different, as Elon talked about. Then, of course, the side view mirrors and the windshield wiper. But on those doors, we did actually, if you look very closely at the live stream, we did get to see one of the features of the Cybertruck in action. This is a feature that's only present on one other Tesla vehicle. That is the Model X self-presenting doors. If you watch carefully, you can see during the presentation that the door for the Cybertruck pops open as Elon is talking. It's not very far, but it's definitely released from the latch, and you can see that on the side view that there's a gap there. Then a few seconds later, again, kind of hard to see, but you can definitely see that the door closes without anybody doing anything. So it is relatched then, and again, if you look at that same side angle, you can now see that it is flush and closed. So I'm super excited to see that. I think the implementation looks like it might be a little bit different than it would be for the Model X. I don't think it's going to pop open quite as far. There may be limitations on what Tesla can do there with the ultrasonic sensors in the Cybertruck door, but I still think that and the auto close are definitely going to be nice features to have. All right, let's move on here. Next, we've got some news to talk about with China. We don't have any updates on Giga Shanghai. It does remain closed, but Shanghai has implemented new COVID policies. Although cases are still rising, they're segmenting Shanghai into what looks like a little bit more than 15,000 areas, which they're designating as closed areas, control areas, or prevention areas. And those are based on the number of days since the last positive test in those areas. So the loosest restrictions are for those prevention areas. That's when there is no positive test for 14 days. Those people are allowed to leave their designated area. If an area's last positive test was between 7 and 14 days ago, those people can leave their apartments but not leave that area. And then if there's been a positive test within the last 7 days, those people cannot leave their apartments at all. So still lockdowns, but not everything is locked down, so that may allow some things to restart at least to some extent. With a policy change like this, I think it also means that Shanghai is likely to see how this policy goes for some period of time, which likely means some continuation of some lockdowns for quite some time. What I have been told is that Tesla's China leadership is, quote, working hard to avoid zero production in April, end quote. Obviously, then that is a possibility if that's something that they're working hard to avoid. I've also been told that the Phase 3 expansion, which originally was planned for April, has also been delayed due to the interruption of local government approval processes by this COVID situation. So definitely disappointing to hear on that front as well. The other update that we've got on China is the China Passenger Car Association, or CPCA's, numbers for March, both sales and production. As you all know, I care most about production. We do have now confirmation that 55,000 vehicles were produced by Tesla in March, 32,800 Model Y, 22,650 Model 3. If you remember back to the delivery and production report, this was very close to the numbers that I had guessed for the Shanghai versus Fremont split. I think it was within 1,000. So depending on where Berlin and Texas fell in terms of total production, that likely puts Fremont's production at right around 125,500 vehicles, slightly down quarter over quarter. But remember, fewer days in Q1 versus Q4. So the Fremont weekly production rate did actually increase by about 130 vehicles per week, but most of that driven by the Model S and X, that was about 80% of the increase. Model 3 and Y, about 20 vehicles more per week, which at the rate that they're at is pretty inconsequential. As we had talked about, since we kind of knew the factors affecting Shanghai, this really is just more of an indicator of how much downtime there actually was. So I think a lower number from Shanghai would have just indicated more downtime, therefore yielding a higher Fremont number. We're not seeing that. That probably means a little bit lower projections for Fremont for the rest of the year. Tough to say that with a whole lot of certainty, though, given the constraints in the supply chain that Tesla is trying to manage through. Anyway, we also got the sales numbers. So this is retail sales in China for the month, and then also exports. Retail sales were really good, 65,700 vehicles, so demand definitely still there locally in China. That is down slightly quarter over quarter, but again, there were not vehicles there to sell in the first place. If we look at the production versus wholesale column, we can see that Tesla, more than any other month so far, drained their inventory down, 10,000 vehicles more sold than produced. And if we now look at the total change in inventory since the beginning of 2021, specifically for Giga Shanghai made vehicles, that has now moved to negative since the start of that period. All right, next we'll hop back over to the United States. We've got an update on pricing. This did happen last week, but of course with the Cyber Rodeo, didn't get too much attention. But Tesla has raised prices again on the Model 3 by $1,000 for both the long range and performance version, the rear wheel drive version staying the same price. Kind of interesting to see now that between the Model 3 and the Model Y, the long range Model 3 is now the vehicle with the highest price increase so far this year, $5,000, and the greatest percent increase at 10%. One other item from the US that we're catching up on here from last week is that the Biden administration did have a virtual meeting that they actually invited Elon Musk to, as well as numerous other automaker CEOs to discuss electric vehicles and charging. Apparently the meeting went well. We can see here a screenshot that does show that Elon Musk did attend. So it has seemed like that relationship to an extent has been improving, and hopefully this is another step towards progress there. All right, last few items here. First, you may have seen a story from late last week that Tesla is partnering with Block and Blockstream to team up to mine Bitcoin. Any headline like that is, in my opinion, really a mischaracterization. Basically, Block and Blockstream are using Powerwalls and Tesla Solar to mine Bitcoin. So they're customers of Tesla rather than them partnering up on this project together. So obviously an interesting use case, but I think for us doesn't really warrant a whole lot of analysis other than the fact that maybe if this goes well, they would continue to do that in the future. But that would just mean more demand, and Tesla and energy not really demand constrained. Perhaps you could say on the energy generation side they are a little bit more, but certainly not in energy storage. All right, just a couple things outside of Tesla then. Of course, we have had significant updates in the Elon Musk joining Twitter saga. We talked previously about how Elon was going to be joining the board. Some of his tweets then have definitely been stirring the pot at Twitter. There were even reports that there was going to be a question and answer session with Elon to help ease maybe some concerns of employees or things like that. Although I'm not sure that that would have necessarily been the outcome of such an event. Anyway, last night, Twitter CEO gave an update saying that Elon has decided not to join our board. He sent a brief note to the company that explained that Elon had been set to join the board officially effective April 9th, but Elon shared the same morning that he will no longer be joining the board. And interestingly, he also highlighted that, quote, "The board and I had many discussions about Elon joining the board and with Elon directly. We were excited to collaborate and clear about the risks. We also believe that having Elon as a fiduciary of the company where he, like all board members, has to act in the best interests of the company and all our shareholders, was the best path forward. The board offered him a seat, end quote. I find that highlight interesting because I think Elon's objectives for Twitter may not necessarily be super aligned with what shareholders might want. There's a pretty telling tweet here that was liked by Elon that was a reply to Twitter CEO's tweet. It says, let me break this down for you. Elon became largest shareholder for free speech. Elon was told to play nice and not speak freely. Elon liking that does not suggest that this is going to be Elon backing down from his involvement with Twitter. Now, a couple very interesting things here. We know that that board seat was contingent on Elon not having more than 14.9% of the outstanding shares. Elon declining this board seat means that that agreement is no longer on the table. Elon can acquire as many shares as he wants now. And remember how we spent all that time talking about the differences between a 13G and a 13D? Well, now there is a new filing with the SEC that is updating that form to a 13D. That drops any of the passive investor requirements that the 13G does carry. It does note, however, that the reporting person, in this case Elon, has no present plans or intentions, which would result in any number of transactions outlined elsewhere in the form at this point in time. However, that can change based on ongoing evaluation, financial conditions, operations, prospects, liquidity, pretty much anything. Elon is very unrestricted in what he can do to Twitter right now, and everybody at Twitter understands that. As we had talked about when the news of this investment first came out, that gives Elon a ton of influence, board seat or not. Since Elon has the power and the capital to continue to buy up shares unrestricted, this likely keeps him with more influence even if he doesn't actually pursue that path. If he does buy more shares, then once he goes above 10%, we should get details on that from Form 4s. As for the liquidity that Elon might need to do that, well, obviously he could sell more Tesla stock, or if he doesn't want to do that, he can definitely get a huge line of credit and buy a lot of Twitter with debt. So overall, pretty fascinating situation. Definitely has to be pretty nerve-wracking for Twitter. All right, that is where we'll wrap it up for today then. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. Also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow for the Tuesday, April 12th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.